And now on WRS, Michael McKay with the McKay Interview.
Hello, everyone. I've not searched out the polling statistics to verify what I'm about to say, but my guess is that if a global opinion poll was taken at the United about the United Nations, a large majority would say that it is a good thing, though far from perfect, and that if it did not exist in this year of 2023, an attempt should be made to create a talking shop, a debating chamber for the world's nations. Of course, the United Nations, which exists today, is much more complicated than just a talking shop. But the UN is, in my view, a great credit to the wise efforts of world leaders who, after the ending of a terrible world war in 1945, did their very best at the time to create an intergovernmental organization whose stated purposes were and still are to maintain international peace and security, develop friendly relations among nations, achieve international cooperation, and serve as a center for harmonizing the actions of nations. I mean, who on earth could argue with that? Now, today we're going to look at the UN through one particular lens, that of Switzerland, the country which I've lived for close to 40 years, and though a great democracy, which only became a UN member in September 2002, almost exactly 21 years ago to the day of this interview. My guest is Switzerland's ambassador and permanent representative to the UN and international organizations in Geneva, His Excellency Mr. Jürg Lauber. Hello, Your Excellency. Thanks for making time for me today and for inviting me and listeners to the McKay Interview to the Swiss Permanent Mission here in Geneva.
Hello, and thank you very much for having me.
It's good to see you again. Ambassador Lauber, many of our listeners listening to this program today are outside the borders of Switzerland and might not be familiar with the significance of this country's special relationship with the United Nations, being one of the oldest parliamentary democracies in the world and one of the most conspicuous democracies to choose to join the UN so late. Please trace briefly for me the key steps of Switzerland's relationship with the UN, as I'm sure many non-Swiss and perhaps even Swiss too will be fascinated to hear it.
Yeah, thanks. Happy to do that. Yes, indeed. You mentioned that Switzerland is one of the longest, oldest constitutional democracies in Europe. In fact, next week we are celebrating 175 years of our first
next
constitution.
Wow.
The 12th of September is 175 years since Switzerland adopted its first constitution, federal constitution, in 1848.
Yeah.
Our history with the UN is not quite that long, but it's in a way longer than the UN in itself. You know, Geneva was the seat of the League of Nations, and the United Nations is the successor organization to the League of Nations. So in 1948, when the UN was established, it was decided that Geneva should be the European seat of the United Nations. So we have this long history. Since 1945, we are an important host state to the UN, and also since its establishment, Switzerland was a very active observer state.
So people, just so they understand it, you were a host state, but not a member.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Yes, a host state anyway, and an observer, but not not a member. And then, as you said, full membership came relatively late in 2002. And since we joined in this 20 plus years, I think we can say that Switzerland was very active. We were a member in several bodies of the United Nations, Economic and Social Council, Human Rights Council several times, and now, since the 1st of January this year, also a member of the Security Council.
Okay, fine. Well, before we get into the heart of our conversation, please tell me and our listeners a little bit about Geneva's importance to the United Nations, because I guess a lot of people don't realize how important this city is.
I think it's fair to say, with unusual, maybe let's not be too modest. I think it's fair to say that Switzerland, Geneva in particular, is the most important center of multilateral cooperation in the world.
Most people would agree with you, would they?
At least people who know what is going on here, they have a sense for that. In terms of history, as I said, Geneva, you know, International Geneva, as a place for international organizations, started in the 19th century with the establishment of the International Committee of the Red Cross, and then the early international organizations like the International, at that time, Telegraph Union, the International Labour Organization in the late 19th century were established here, then the League of Nations. So it started even before the UN. is also huge in terms of volume. You know, the number of international organizations, more than 40 international organizations. So besides the UN, many other organizations are in Geneva.
More than 40?
40.
40, okay.
It's a big number. Yeah. Hundreds of non-governmental organizations, all the permanent missions, et cetera, make this volume. Then thousands of delegates who travel to Geneva every year to attend conferences, meetings. Then also in terms of diversity, so many issues are being dealt with in Geneva: human rights, humanitarian affairs, labor, trade, telecommunications, health. I could go on and on. And again, not just the issues, but also the diversity of actors. You have government representatives, you have international organizations, you have civil society, you have academia, you have the private sector, all of them participating in Geneva in this multilateral world. So yes, it's the European seat of the United Nations, but in many ways, it's actually bigger than the United Nations.
Now, Switzerland is a member of the Security Council. Just give me an idea of what Switzerland's objectives or even commitments, I don't know, but at least objectives, as it entered the race for that coveted seat on the Security Council.
You know, the decision at the base for us wanting to become a member, an elected member of the Security Council, was always the realization that it is a responsibility for a UN member state to participate in the Council and to contribute to international peace and security. A country like Switzerland very much depends on international stability, and international stability depends on peace and security. The prosperity of Switzerland and its people depends on stable conditions around Switzerland, and the realization of that, and that we have to make an active effort and contribution to international peace and security, was at the basis. Then also, early on, it was decided we don't want to be somebody else just to be electable or to be on the Security Council. Like, the continuity of our positions, the continuity of our engagement in all the areas that are being dealt with at the UN, that was also at the basis. And then, of course, it's an opportunity to advancing your agenda and making a contribution. So we defined for the 2 years four priorities. Number one, sustaining peace, in the sense of taking a large view of what constitutes peace. It's more than the absence of a hot conflict, the absence of shooting. And how can we, with our own experience and capacities, and contribute to that? Number two is the protection of civilians, a very traditional priority, of course. Given that Geneva also considers itself the global center for humanitarian affairs. Number three is the relation between climate change and peace and security, an obvious one more and more when we see what's happening with the climate conditions around the world and the impact this has on societies and on peace and security. And then number four is also something we've been promoting since ever we've been a member of the UN, is efficiency and effectiveness of the Council. We've been working on the working methods of the Council for a long time, as in other areas of the UN. So these four priorities are not, again, they are to be seen in a continuity of positions, initiatives we've taken in the UN in the past, but we want to drive them on as a member, also as an elected member of the Security Council.
Ambassador, this may sound like a simplistic question, but it's not meant to be simplistic. But our audience is a very general audience. What are the big issues today for Switzerland as a member of the Security Council, or do they follow these four that you've just told me? Or is it anything different?
If you look a bit what happens around the world, you see that these four priorities are really spot on. One, you see a lot of tension between the big powers in the world, and this comes down to some level of tension within the Security Council, especially among the permanent members, which also means that the role of the elected 10 members is even more important. If the permanent members, the big powers, have difficulties finding common ground, I think that the elected members have an additional task to drive the agenda of the Security Council.
And can I stop you there? I mean, in your experience, because you live it as a professional, can these people have influence on these? Because this is my next question. These sort of relics from 1945 who are still on the Security Council, can they put pressure on them to change behavior?
To a certain extent. I mean, of course, there are limits to that. And the Council, like the UN at large, is a reflection of the global situation, is a reflection of the relations the member states have amongst themselves. So you see that also in the Security Council. But the fact that you have these 10 who are elected for a two-year period who come to the Council because they made a decision, we want to make a contribution to international peace and security, you can take initiatives, you can put issues on the agenda of the Council, you can have events in the Council that are to a certain extent able to bring the agenda forward.
That's good.
Just an example. You know that there's a monthly, the presidency changes every month, and we had the first time we had the presidency was in the month of May, and we had two events, one on, again, sustaining peace, about how to build trust among nations, and another one on the protection of civilians. And both, they didn't change the world, but they put these important issues clearly on the agenda of the Council for the world to see, for the other member states to participate and to share ideas and share best practices. And in that way, I think we succeeded in advancing these two issues.
Now, it's no surprise that I'm going to ask you the next question. And I'm almost of that generation. I was born a little bit after the founding of the United Nations. I'm a great believer in it. But first of all, you must be, I've met you before, a realist to be in the profession you're in, but you must have a good sense of optimism also to be in that profession. Is there the remotest chance, in your view, that the Security Council can reform itself? It reflects a worldview, surely, of the late 1940s that's surely not relevant to today's reality.
I'm 2 points on this. First, yes, the composition of the Council, the five permanent members reflect the geopolitical reality of 1945. And it's true, I very much believe that multilateralism, an organization like the United Nations, has to continuously prove their legitimacy through participation and impact. And no comments on that. You see where my point is.
Yes, yes.
But in reality also, things have changed a lot. You know, there is 193 member states that take part in the discussions within the United Nations who drive the agenda on. So the five permanent members, they cannot choose just anything they want. They have to. They have to also see where the discussion is going among the wider membership. They have to take that into
account. They take the temperature as well.
And they have to, not least to preserve the special position they have. They have a responsibility towards the rest of the membership, and they need to take this into account.
Well, that's encouraging. That's encouraging to know. I was going to ask you, and I hadn't realized it only lasted 1 month, but realistically, what were you able to achieve in 4 weeks?
You know, it's by design, of course. The founders of the UN didn't want to have a all-powerful presidency of the Security Council, which, in my opinion, makes sense. You know, the system in Switzerland where we change the president every year, it's a bit similar. We want strong institutions. We don't necessarily want to have strong individuals. In that way, it makes sense. Yeah. So if you have a month of presidency, your first priority is really to assure the smooth working of the Council, you know, the meetings, preparation, etc. And I think we succeeded in the month.
So there's a lot of work in that.
There's a lot of organizational work to make sure that things that have to be decided, like extension of a peacekeeping mandate and all the work that has been decided before, the follow-up. And don't forget, the implementation of decisions is as important as in taking new decisions.
Yeah.
I think that was handled very well by our colleagues in New York. And then we had these key moments I mentioned earlier, one on the protection of civilians, one on sustaining peace, where we were able to draw the attention to bring on some ideas to get really a discussion going around this point.
Okay, let's just turn to Geneva now. We're sort of at the halfway stage of our conversation. With your very busy multilateral agenda, please tell me a little bit about the top, let's say, three or four issues for you here at the UN Geneva. I mean, they must be complex, but which ones absorb you the most, Ambassador?
No, we have this double role as Switzerland here in Geneva. On the one hand, we are the host state. And then we are also a member state in all these organizations. And as a host state, my priority now and together with my colleagues here and in Bern and together with the partners, which are the city of Geneva and the canton of Geneva, is to make sure that the actors of International Geneva, the international organizations, the diplomats, the families, the NGOs, find the best possible working conditions here in Geneva to do their job. So how do we develop the host state offer to all these participants? How do we develop infrastructure? For instance, in times of, you know, digitalization, we've seen over the last 2-3 years, new models for how we are doing conferences, how we are doing work, talking about home office and hybrid content. How do we adapt the infrastructure to make sure we have the best possible conditions? How can we make sure that the services we provide are up to quality? How can we make sure that the security, high level of security we have in Geneva is maintained?
So that's part of being a good host.
That's exactly. Yeah. So that is definitely my big priority. And then on the other side, the more multilateral side, there is, of course, very important issues at stake, which are also dealt with in Geneva or primarily dealt with in Geneva. Think about global health, the current negotiations at the World Health Organization about how do we better prepare national health systems for a possible next pandemic. So what advice, what best practices, what expertise do we want to share with the member states? How to give them the ability to face to new challenges? I was talking about digitalization. ITU, the International Telecommunication Union, plays an important role. They're looking into what's the impact of artificial intelligence. How do we preserve humanity? You know, humanity,
I know what you
so
mean,
much
yeah.
at stake of international
Absolutely,
Geneva.
Yeah.
How do we preserve humanity in the face of technological revolution? Climate issues are in discussion here at the World Meteorological Organization. The Human Rights Council is a very central body in Geneva. And I mean, you look around the world, what you see in terms of increased violations of human rights. So the work at the council is very important. So several thematic priorities.
And again, just for my benefit, you know, not having the detailed knowledge and information that you have, just give me an example of how that synchronizes, how that dovetails in with what goes on in New York.
No, the UN essentially works on three levels, or the multilateral system works on three levels. You have a level of political debate and conversation where member states and others come together and say, okay, we see that climate change is getting worse. What do we do? And that, I think, is primarily the role of New York, the political debate.
Okay.
Then you have a level where you start taking... developing standards or norms, you know, okay, we have health issues, we need to have standards for national health services, you need norms for technical equipment, etc., etc. That's Geneva. Geneva is
ITU, that kind of thing.
That's a lot of norm setting, not necessarily legally binding. Some of them are just technical standards, they can go as far as legally binding treaties, but the standard setting, that's a strong point of Geneva. And then the third level is the operational level, what happens in the field. But whatever happens in the field, of course, is influenced by decisions taken at headquarters. And here again, Geneva has an important role as a back office to many humanitarian operations. You know, UNHCR is here, ICRC is here, International Organization for Migration is here. So New York, primarily the place for political debate. Geneva, primarily the place of norm setting and of operational backstopping.
I see. Okay. My guest today is Ambassador Jürg Lauber, Switzerland's permanent representative of the United Nations and other international organizations in Geneva. And we're talking naturally about the UN as well as Switzerland's special relationship with it. I want to just turn to the Swiss people for a moment, Ambassador. I've lived here a long time on both sides of the Röstigraben, to use the local expression for that. And I just want to know, in your experience, to what extent does the Swiss population take an interest in what's going on in the United Nations, whether in Geneva or in New York? And is it important to you that they take an interest? And give me some concrete examples of how that relationship with the people, the Swiss people, exists.
It's very important. Please. It's very important for us that whatever we do in foreign policy, including in multilateral organizations, is very much grounded in domestic policy. You know, we are a semi-direct democracy. A lot of things are being decided by the people,
not least
even our participation in the UN.
Yes, that's right.
2002, we had a popular vote.
I didn't ask you about that, how it was done, but it was good you mentioned it.
So really, that's all the basics. Yeah. And ever since, I think we can say that the level of interest among parliamentarians, media, and the people at large for what the UN, the UN system, the UN organizations do, what we do in the UN, is fairly high compared to other states. Also, another example is the debate, the discussion before we joined the UN Security Council, should Switzerland become a member of the Security Council or not? And now there's a very high interest also for what's happening in the Security Council and what are Switzerland's initiative and etc. I find that very comforting. I find it very comforting to see this level of interest, to feel the level of support. Also, by the way, for International Geneva, there's a very high interest. And some sort of, I would even say, pride. I think Swiss people, maybe they don't know all the details of what's happening in Geneva, but they are proud to see Switzerland as a host to the community, the international community. I think they see this as a contribution. Mm. We invest quite a lot of money.
Mm.
They see this as a contribution to the multilateral cooperation. And they're ready to support that, and they're ready to keep investing in that.
No, I'm not surprised that Geneva supports it, but I've often thought, having lived in Inner Schweiz, in the center of Switzerland, you know, to what extent, if you ask the man in Uri, in Schwyz, in Zug, and these places, how they see things, I'm not sure. I just don't know. That's why I asked you the question about the Swiss population in general.
Again, I don't think they would have a detailed knowledge of what's being discussed here in this and that organization, but you know, I mean, with regard to Geneva, most people, I would vouch, will know about.
Yes.
There is this place where all these international conferences are, where these organizations are. Most people have a notion of the humanitarian tradition of International Geneva. Yeah. And again, they feel proud to be.
Yes, I feel that here too.
About that.
A particular question. Your colleague, Ambassador Thomas Gremmingham, you know well, I'm sure, explained Swiss neutrality to me and my listeners back in March of last year on this radio program. That was just over 1 year after Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine. And we were discussing EU sanctions and, at the time, the recent decision then of the Swiss Federal Council. He said many things to me of vital importance in that interview. However, some particular words which still remain with me were his remarks concerning Switzerland's neutrality. He told me, and I quote, that Switzerland best friend in international relations is international law, and that you need to show solidarity with the friends of international law. Please bring me and our listeners up to date on the current discussions, if that's the right word, about Switzerland's neutral position vis-a-vis the war in Ukraine, and how does Switzerland behave neutrally while also being a member of the Security Council? I mean, they're two different questions, but I beg your indulgence that I put them together like that.
They're very much linked, you know, and I don't think the situation has really changed since you talked to Thomas. And I think he's right, of course. Neutrality is a concept under international law, which means essentially that we don't support the military efforts of either party in an armed conflict. And that's exactly what we do. But neutrality does not mean indifference. When international law is violated, we will say so. We will speak up. And we did particularly in this case now of the Russian aggression against Ukraine, our government. We hear diplomats in Geneva and elsewhere are very vocal about this. This is a dramatic violation of international law. Neutrality also doesn't stop us then from coming to the support of the population concerned by the conflict. So there is massive humanitarian aid coming from Switzerland to, for instance, Ukraine, but other places around the world where you see armed conflict as well. So, and the same then applies to situations that are dealt with in the Security Council. If there is a violation of the UN Charter of International Law, we will speak up. We will clearly say so.
Neutrality is a dynamic concept. I mean, what I often struggle with, and not being Swiss and never being in, and not being in any way involved with diplomacy, is how you as a professional explain to other of your peers what neutrality really means. Or do they must test you sometimes.
Yes, they do. Because yeah, I can imagine there is do. There is a, on the one hand, I think the concept is very well understood because professional diplomats know about the law of neutrality and what it implies, and they also know about how Switzerland applies the law of neutrality. But if you are a party to a conflict, or if you are very closely allied with one party in a conflict, of course, you would like to get support for that party, and you are pushing a bit. And what does it mean? But in essence, it's very well understood. So I have no problem explaining the concept of Swiss neutrality, how it's applied, how it doesn't mean indifference, how it doesn't mean we are not speaking up against violations of international law, how it doesn't mean we're not supporting the population suffering from an armed conflict with humanitarian aid, how it does not mean we're not accepting refugees. They understand that very well, and I have no difficulties doing that with my colleagues, with my peers.
Okay, that's good to know that. I have one more question for you on International Geneva, but honestly, you've explained your close belief in International Geneva as the top Swiss diplomat here, so I'm not going to ask you to repeat your answers. Ambassador, we've covered a lot of ground, and I'm most grateful to you for answering all my questions so fully and so carefully, and we wish Switzerland well during the remainder of its time on the UN Security Council. My guest today has been Ambassador Jürg Lauber, Switzerland's permanent representative of the United Nations and other international organizations here in Geneva. Thank you again, Ambassador.
Thank you much. It was a pleasure.
That was the McKay Interview with Michael McKay. And don't forget, you can hear that interview again on our website, worldradio.ch.